Hello there, and welcome to Flagstaff County Podcast. I am Nick Dunn, the Assistant Agricultural Fieldman, and here with me is Marcus Weber, the President of Landview Drones. Today, we will be discussing how drones have had an impact on the agricultural industry and how producers can use them as another tool in the toolbox to increase efficiency and return on investment.
You're listening to the official podcast of Flagstaff County.
How are you today, Marcus?
I'm great, thanks. Happy to tell you a little bit about this.
All right. So, I guess we'll just start off with your company, Landview Drones, and some services that you provide.
Sure. Well, we primarily enable farmers to use the equipment. We do have a little bit of services that we provide in the summertime as well, but really we're all about putting packages together that a farmer could use on their farm by themselves, because we're big believers that the drones are the most powerful tool when the farmer themselves is using it. It doesn't have to be the farmer, of course. Sometimes it's somebody else on the farm, but the drone being on the farm is important so that it's there when you need it. And secondly, in order to enable that, we also have a school. So an ag drone school that travels all over Western Canada and teaches people how to get real value out of the drone rather than just taking a few pretty pictures. It really does become a farm tool.
Yes, absolutely. And drones are fairly new to the industry. So could we talk about some types of drones? I understand that you guys actually sell packages and customize packages to the need of the producer. Am I right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And the packages always have all the accessories you need for farm use, like heavy duty cases to protect your investment and landing pads so your camera doesn't get scratched. But most importantly, they have different types of cameras. And there's really three different kinds of systems that we sell now. In the past, we've always had scouting systems. So something that is small, portable, and you can use it to find a cow or to check your weed profile in a crop scenario. And then secondly, there's mapping drones, which fly autonomously over the field and create a map of the entire field or the entire pasture. And then thirdly, and this is kind of new, we're also selling application drones now. So whether it's spraying or spreading a granular product, those are brand new to the market, and we carry those as well.
Okay, I find that very intriguing. So do you guys, are you finding a lot of producers are using it as a blanket application, or more of just an in-depth and target application, in certain areas and pinpointed areas?
It absolutely will be more of a focused application in the short term. In the longer term, I think we will see full swarms of them. The technology now is able to swarm. One operator could handle five drones, but there's still some regulatory issues that need to be sorted out. Currently, you can't apply pesticides except for research. You can apply fertilizers and cover crops and that type of thing, but not pesticides. So because of that, adoption rates are not huge yet, but interest is extremely high, especially because the technology has just become so easy to use that farmers would be comfortable flying a 50-kilogram drone. But there's regulatory issues both on the aviation and on the pesticide front that still need to be overcome. So the spraying drones really are new to the market. There's a small number of farmers that are doing that, and we see that number growing quickly, but still not a huge number. And certainly it's not ready for spraying a full quarter section routine.
Okay. Yeah, no, that does make sense. I guess one of the main issues that we do face right now is, like you said, certification and the amount of payload that these drones can actually carry, right? So I do find it interesting that you mentioned that rather than having one drone in the air, producers will have multiple drones, right? And increasing their amount and ability of ground to cover in a given time. So with that, do you mind talking just about a little bit about certification? I understand that your company is Canada-wide, and you've actually partnered with another company called Blackhawk Aeronautical Industry Services. So if you don't mind just talking a little bit more about your egg drone school and sure. Maybe some locations that producers in Flagstaff County can maybe attend in the coming year.
Absolutely. So the school's been running since 2016, and really where it came from was two things. We were selling these packages as early as 2015, and farmers were buying them. And then I talked to them after the season, and they would have great harvest videos, maybe go scout a few fields, but they weren't into the mapping aspect. And the mapping really is quite simple once you get used to it. So we created the school to teach people how to map, because it is somewhat like riding a bike. Once you've gotten over the anxiety of watching your drone take off all by itself, it becomes a very easy task. And we wanted people to experience that. So we created the school so people could learn how to map. And secondly, people weren't getting certified. And at the time, certification was a little different. It depended on whether you were flying recreationally or commercially. Now it no longer does. Since 2019, if your drone is over 250 grams, then you must have a certificate to fly it. And it doesn't matter what the purpose is at all anymore. It is simply the type of airspace you're in, how close you are to people. It's a risk-based thing. So what we do in our Ag Drone School is equip people to get an basic certificate. And a basic certificate lets you fly to within 1 nautical mile of a certified heliport, 3 nautical miles of a certified airport, and within 30 meters of bystanders. One other category I think that's important too is weight. So, and it has to be less than 25 kilograms. It's a wide range. 250 grams to 25 kilograms is a huge range.
Yes, but absolutely.
Basic certificate really is enough for most farm use. The only exception being if you have land that's right next to a certified airport, then you likely might need an advanced certificate. So we've actually partnered with Coastal in BC, and they deliver an online advanced course because you need at least 25 hours of training for that advanced course. So I recommend people only get the advanced if they actually need it. If they've got airspace that is controlled airspace and they need that type of certification, for most people, the basic is plenty. And we do that in a 2-day course where we teach them the necessities on the regulations. But more importantly, we also teach them how to operate a drone. Most of the people that come to the school have never really flown a drone. We take them from their first flight to autonomous mapping in those 2 days. And wow, that basic certificate really is enough for most farmers.
Okay. And so I know your locations for next year aren't written in stone yet, but one thing I'll just mention, here in Flagstaff County, some of the closest locations would be in Camrose and Vermilion. You can go to the website and they will have more information on that.
Yep, absolutely. And all of those, we always do a big round of these schools before seeding. So they're all from mid-March to mid-April. And Innisfree is another location that'll be close to you. The Ag Society in Innisfree is bringing us in on April 6th and 7th. That one is definitely confirmed.
Okay. Well, that sounds very good. So that leads me to my next topic here. So like how you kind of touched base a little bit on it. How complicated are these drones to fly? How user-friendly are they, I guess, is what I'm asking.
They're incredibly easy to fly. A lot of people have experience with what they thought was a drone, which is really a remotely piloted helicopter. They bought something at a mall kiosk, crashed it inside the house a number of times, and they think they're not going to be able to fly a drone.
Yeah.
But what we do at these schools on the first afternoon is we put controllers in people's hands and get them to just try it because it's so simple. And we usually start with those that are most reluctant, and they're just amazed with how easy these are to control, whether it's indoors or outdoors. There's so many sensors built into these that they just sit and hover and hold their position. We fly deliberately inside small community halls with 3 lines of drones flying side by side and force people to fly in confined airspace. And even with that kind of a challenge, everybody excels at these schools and is able to control these. They're very simple to fly.
Right. So it's not hard to learn. And I feel like a lot of it can be self-taught too after the course, right? By just taking it into your farmyard and just throwing it in the air and playing around with it a little bit, right? Becoming more familiar with the controls. And then even when it comes to mapping, like there's software out there now and AI has had a tremendous impact on this and they essentially just fly themselves. Am I right?
That's right. Yeah. You just tell them which area you want to fly and how good you want the imagery to be. And
right,
then you hit start and watch it fly. You still have to be there as an operator.
Absolutely.
For safety, because there might be manned aircraft coming through. There might be, you know, a puppy want to grab it at landing. Yeah. So there still has to be a person there, but that person really is there as a monitoring function, not operating anymore. The drone operates itself.
Okay. And so when you're mapping fields, they do about 80 acres, depending on the drone, right? Is that right?
Yeah, we're getting more than that in most cases. With the Mavic line, we were getting about 120 acres in one battery. We're flying at the full 400 foot altitude. And then we have larger drones for commercial use that'll do significantly more as well. A fixed wing can easily cover half a section in a flight. But those are $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 systems. Most farmers will buy something in the $3,000 to $10,000 range, depending on what kind of cameras they need. And yeah, you're right. You're about right. About 80 to 160 acres in a flight is what they will cover. And really what the drone does in most of these instances, I mean, it's a better NDVI map than satellite for those that are familiar with that. That's kind of the ultimate of what people would do. But in most cases, really what the drone's doing is just saving you a whole bunch of time, right? Most people are using them for scouting. The mapping is nice, but 90% of the time, even if you have a drone that's capable of mapping, you're just manually flying it to get a quick look at something that is otherwise hard to access or dangerous to access. Like I know counties, for example, will buy these to check beaver dams. Yes, and that way you're not charging through extremely dangerous terrain, risking breaking ankles and taking half an hour to get there. Instead, flying there in 2 minutes, realizing that there may be nothing to do, putting the drone away and driving away. So it's a huge time-saving thing. And it lets you see parts of fields that you've never seen before. The classic example I always give people is, well, have you seen the back end of this quarter of canola this season? Well, no, you haven't. As soon as the canola is knee deep, you're not going any further than 100 yards into that. And that's probably an exaggeration. It's probably 50.
Yes, absolutely.
You don't see the back end of your fields. And one of the biggest things that happens when somebody gets a drone is they fall out of love with their canola, because canola always looks great from the edge, no matter how bad the crop is. When it's in bloom, it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
But it does not take more than even 10 feet off the ground to start to see fertility issues, compaction issues, soil issues, water issues. Doesn't matter what affects crop, you're going to see that from the air.
Yeah. So it's an ultimate time saver at the end of the day, right? Like it'll help producers if they'll just be able to recognize some problematic areas before going out there and walking fields. They'll have a more general idea on where to go and look for if they need to, you know, start digging around in the soil, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it really points out problems too. You'll see problems that you didn't know you had on your farm. And the big one is equipment timing. If something's turning on and off at the wrong timing, or that misses, those just stick out like a sore thumb from the air.
Right. Okay. So are producers incorporating their stitched maps into variable rate prescriptions for the machinery?
Yes, to some degree. So one of the biggest uses is down in the Corn Belt. Corn is an extremely heavy user of nitrogen, and the fields often are rather uniform anyway. So variable rate nitrogen makes a lot of sense there. Here in Western Canada, though, we're not doing a whole bunch of top dressing. Those that are, absolutely. Those maps are a great tool for in-crop variable rate fertilizer. But for with seed, there's more important data. Your soil data is more important. Your last year's yield map is probably better than this year's yield map for when you're applying fertilizer at seeding time. But the one that I've seen here in Western Canada that's actually taken off is variable rate fungicide. What those maps, the stitched maps, for especially with near infrared light, these NDVI or normalized difference vegetation maps, what they will tell you is yield potential. And you can turn off fungicide in those parts of a canola field that are only going to make 20 bushel or 15 bushel. It doesn't make sense to spend any more money on that. So people have been using satellite imagery largely for those VR fungicide maps. But we've had a lot of years where there's too much cloud cover, too much smoke, and timeliness of satellite imagery is also an issue. So people use the drone as a backup. They'll use satellite when it's available. And if satellite's not available, they'll have the drone to be able to still produce that variable rate prescription so they can apply fungicide only to a part of the field.
Right. And I guess another benefit over that UAVs have over satellite imagery is not only cloud cover, but like you dictate when you would like to generate a map, right? Like it's not like some days if there's like heavy smoke or lots of cloud cover, there's going to be times where you won't see a map generated through satellites for maybe even a couple weeks, right? So,
yeah. And there've been huge strides in the speed of the drones as well. I remember one of the classic examples that I use is I didn't step on this one field back in 2015, but I went out there three times on three separate days to create the maps that I needed to then revisit another part of the field. But now we're at the point where about 10, 15 minutes after flight, you've got a finished map. There's software that will take all that huge amount of imagery and create a map for you within 10 or 15 minutes. And that then lends itself really well to variable rate herbicide application, for example. Right. Anything where you need really timely data, the drone is always going to outperform. There is a labor component there that you don't have for satellite, but it'll give you way higher resolution and it'll be timely.
Yes, absolutely. So when it comes to grain farms, like, does it matter how big my farm is in terms of if I can utilize a drone or not? Like for example, if I'm a bigger farmer covering a lot of acres, like what's the best suited drone for myself?
Well, if you do actually want to do variable rate fungicide on all your acres in a season and you've got 5,000 acres and up, you probably should be looking at a fixed wing drone to be able to collect that data. The fixed wing drones use a wing to generate lift rather than rotors. And the difference in flight time is immense. So you could keep up with your sprayer with a large fixed wing drone. Whereas with a Mavic, you still can keep up with a sprayer, but it's a lot more flying and a lot more switching of data. So the difference there really is about 50% more capacity with most of the fixed wings.
Okay. So where do you see the future going with drones and in grain farms as far as scouting, like you were saying, spraying and application? Like how far out from spraying and applying herbicides and fertilizers are we?
As soon as the regulatory issue is lifted and a few products are on label, they will be immediately adopted. But there are only a few of those use cases that are that immediate. The one that comes to mind really is brush control in pastures. Pastures are so rough that you often can't get a custom operator in there to spray for you. Aerial application has its own challenges as well. And it's hard to be applying product to some of the brush and not to others and leaving shelter belts where you want them. The drone really is the ideal tool for that kind of scenario. Mm-hmm. So as soon as PMRA allows a weed control product for brush control on pastures, I think you'll see immediate adoption, wide adoption of drones for that purpose. And that's also because it doesn't need to be as timely. For something like general broadleaf control in a cereal, I don't think that the drone really offers that huge an advantage. I could see it potentially for a 1,000 or 2,000 acre farmer, the drones entirely replacing their ground fleet. But if you've got a ground sprayer anyway, broadleaf control on a quarter section largely is still going to be on the ground. The real benefit would become if you removed all of the tracks altogether. If you didn't have any in-season traffic, there's huge benefit there. That's 2 or 3% of your crop that you're trampling every year anyway. So, I mean, that is still 3 to 5 years away, though. We've got regulatory issues and technology issues to solve to get enough flight time. The battery and water volumes are still things that need to be tested and improved on. So small acreage uses and pasture, I think, will be immediate, plus vegetation management along right-of-ways and those types of things. I mean, those are incredibly efficient use cases for a drone.
Okay. I was at the Canola Palooza, I think it's 2 years ago now, in Lacombe. And I remember running by this one booth, and it was a company that they were flying drones. And I can't remember which drone it was. I think it might have been the Matrice, but they had a very heavy payload camera on there. And one of the reports that I seen was they could actually detect insects. Like, that's how good this resolution was on this camera. And actually give you a number of how many flea beetles, for example, were on these cotyledons in this field. Does your company do anything similar to that, or might be considering heading in that direction?
So most of the drones currently looking at mapping crop fly the entire field and essentially do a census of the entire field to make sure that they get 80% overlap of the entire surface. And that creates a great map at much higher resolution than satellite, but often an extremely high resolution picture of a few points in the field is more telling, because it takes you from showing you where there is a problem or might be a problem to what the problem is. And that type of a rig where you've got a really high resolution camera taking spot pictures of a few locations provides incredibly important information, because you can see individual plants, and more importantly, you can see parts of those plants. You can now see flea beetle damage. Right. You could see insects, and it all depends on the resolution of the camera, but often the damage done by the insect is more important. Or in a cutworm scenario, you don't even want to see the damage done to the cutworm plant, to the plant by the cutworm. You want to see the plants that never really emerged, essentially, or got halfway out and they were already chewed off by cutworms. So you're looking for the bare patch.
Absolutely.
But that type of scouting, I think, really has potential. There is no one that I know of that has a system that is ready to roll out commercially that way, but there are numerous companies working on that. And I see huge potential in that. Farmers right now can do that themselves, right? Flying a drone down to 2 meters above crop and taking a look at what's happening at the center of the field is entirely possible.
Yes.
But it takes time to control the drone and take it there. And it takes a little bit of experience to do that comfortably.
Right.
So the automation of flying a drone to those locations and getting those really high resolution pictures is something that I think you'll see either this season or next season commercially available and very useful.
Okay, no, that's very interesting stuff, Marcus. So that kind of leads me into my next topic here. So we still have quite a few cattlemen in our county. So when it comes to technology within the drone, what would you recommend for our cattle producers out there?
So cattle producers are amazing in terms of how they use drones. I find a huge difference. Crop guys tend to buy a drone for the first year, kind of dabble with it. The second year, maybe think about mapping with it. Cattlemen, right. You give them a drone, they learn how to fly it, and then they use it at least every week, if not every day. It just becomes a regular part of their toolkit. And here's a couple of ways that they use it. One is just if you're going to a pasture and you want to know where the cows are, you put it up 100 or 200 feet. You can see that they're over in the northwest corner, and then you're not going to go looking for them in the southeast, right?
Right.
It's just a matter of locating where the animals are at before you go to them. And then there's also a lot of scenarios where you're looking for specific animals or checking or monitoring. And if it's a looking scenario where you're trying to find something, it's like search and rescue. And a lot of these drone companies have developed drones that are specifically for search and rescue. We're just going to use them for cows instead of people. So they have thermal cameras and visible spectrum cameras side by side. So you can now at night go and locate cattle. Then put a spotlight on them and see what the animal is. Is it in good shape? Is it something you need to deal with? So I'm seeing people using them for checking cows at night, for example, during calving season.
Yes.
But in that kind of a scenario, you need a thermal camera and you're looking at a $9,000 system as opposed to a $3,000 system without it. So I always tell people the thermal is great, but if you're not willing to fly at night, you really don't need the thermal. During the daytime, the ability to zoom in with a drone is more important than the ability to see heat.
Right.
And that's for things like reading an ear tag, right? You can get cattle very used to drones flying around them, and it doesn't take very long for them to just ignore that there's a drone there, but you're still going to be 10 or 20 or 30 feet away from them. And the zoom is incredibly important to be able to read a tag, to check details of an animal. If there's one limping, figure out which one that is and then go out to find it.
Yeah.
So I suggest cattle ranches and feedlots alike get some zoom on whatever drone that they're using.
Right. And even like inspecting fencing, right? Like that's huge. You'd save lots of time just by flying up and, you know, scanning the fences and, like you said.
Yeah. And again, the zoom is important, right? You're going to fly at high altitude and just check to see, you'll immediately see if there's trees laying over or if there's a trail going through where there's supposed to be a fence. You're looking for the indicators of a down fence first.
Right.
But then with the zoom, you can zoom right in and check to see if that fence is in good shape or if it's, you know, if there's still only one wire there instead of three, you'll get all the details with the zoom.
Yeah. Is there anyone doing herding with drones? I've read about that online, but...
You've probably read one of the articles that featured John Church. So Dr. John Church from Thompson Rivers University is kind of the drones in cattle guru and has been working in that field for a long time. And he's from central BC, and they were using them for bringing cattle out of pasture. But he says that he kind of regrets talking too much about the chasing, because you really do need to choose. Cattle are smart animals. They're either going to be scared of a drone or they're going to tolerate it. It's one or the other. And you really have to choose. If you want to use it for herding, you're never going to use that drone for monitoring those animals.
Right.
And for most people, the monitoring in the long term is going to be more important than that one cow they need to get out of a pasture that day. So it does work, though. It works incredibly well in that scenario where you're in mountainous country, heavy trees, and you can't find a few animals and you need to get them out. It works beautifully for doing that. You can just buzz over top of them until they get so annoyed they rejoin the rest of the herd. So there are definitely people doing that. The other scenario that I've seen with other animals, though, but with sheep, is there were people that were using them for herding. They put a little speaker on there with the barking sound of a dog.
Oh, wow.
Or whistling, and yep, using it to move the flock. But then they realized there's a better way. So what they used the drone for was simply positioning it over the gate every time before they moved them to a new pasture. And okay, now the sheep follow the drone around. It's like a Pied Piper.
Yeah. Okay, right on. So if we're using these drones for monitoring, because that is our best use, is there a lot of impacts in terms of stress to our livestock?
No. When cattle are first brought into contact with the drone, they will get scared, especially if they see the takeoff. They'll get stressed from that response of thinking there's a predator coming at them.
Right.
So it's important that you take off somewhere away from the animals where they don't see the takeoff, and then gradually decrease the distance to them. You'll notice if they're getting stressed, cattle will start to circle and get jumpy.
Right.
And there'll be a difference too between the different types of animals. I mean, you can put yearling steers with drones and you can fly 50 feet away from them. They couldn't care less. Put some yearling heifers or a cow herd closer to them and you'll get a multitude of different responses. Some of them will attack a drone, some of them will run. So you do need to be careful and really get them used to that drone over time and decrease that distance to them over time. But you can get your cow herd quite used to them if you just spend a little bit of time doing that.
Right. So yeah, the more you fly around them, and obviously if you're not chasing them with it, they're gonna become used to the drone in the air, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So what does the future look like for drones and livestock, Marcus?
Well, there's companies that are already working on a drone scanning an animal and giving you its body weight.
Okay.
and then the thermal technology, I think, will continue to improve and be miniaturized further. So I think it'll be a standard part of the offering. So now finding cattle becomes much simpler than it has been in the past. I could see some applications, and I know people have worked on things like applying product.
Right.
To animals, either medicating them or insect control product, applying
right,
that those by drone. All of that, though, is very much research focused now. And the work that John Church does out in BC as well, it's focused on breeding. He's measuring response to heat and heat tolerance using the drones. But I don't see any huge developments in terms of either software or hardware for the cattle guys right now. I think it will become a standard part of what everyone does as the cost of these drones comes down, but I don't see any immediate new offerings there.
All right, that brings us to the end with you, Marcus. I would like to thank you for your valued time today. I think it's important to have these conversations to bring awareness to the industry and inform our producers of what the future holds in relation to drones.
Thank you very much. We'll be right back.